So hey, it's Peter, and you're very welcome to another episode of the Such Show Garden Podcast. This is part two of two, James Besson, and if you haven't already heard it, you should press pause on this one and go back and listen to part one, and then come back here and listen to this one. It'll be worth your while, I promise, and it'll make part two all make sense. Anything you hear in today's episode, at Such Show on Twitter, facebook.com/SuchShow, and SuchShow.com. Thanks so much. And enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sod Show Garden Podcast.
I can't remember the last time I ever met somebody where I was, oh my God, it's whoever. Mm. Although I do remember being in London once and I was sat next to two girls by his side, and one was Dallas and one was Brandy. And I don't know how I ended up sitting there next to in the first place. For it was some actors' convention we ended up in the middle of. I'm sidetracking now. But do you get starstruck when you maybe you're at the press day? Do you go, oh my God, it's such and such?
No, I have no general knowledge and I don't have a television, so I don't know who anyone is. I actually asked Prince Philip who he was when I met him. So I'm not Prince Andrew, not Prince Philip, but still, I'm embarrassingly foolish when it comes to my general knowledge and knowing people. I don't get starstruck, but what that did make me think about was when I started in garden design, started to come to the SGD conferences and seeing the likes of Dan Pearson and all the sort of Ulf Nordfields and Pete Aldorfs, and thinking, wow, they are, you know, my heroes in life. And then feeling kind of starstruck by those people. And then now going to those things and people looking at me with that similar light, I really am embarrassed by that. I think the whole starstruck thing needs smashing up so that people don't feel like it's unattainable. You know, I really feel it's a fake image. It's not real.
Well, I'll rephrase that to you. Well, in my case, it's not starstruck. Mm. It's I think we were talking about Kate Gold and for the first time at Chelsea in quite a long time, which you alluded to earlier on. Kate's 2017 garden, I walked around it three or four times, because I think if you've built gardens at a show, again, it's a little bit the vaguest thing in mind, you can at times walk up Main Avenue and go, I got it. It's not to say that they don't look good, it's more how it was all pieced together. Mm-hmm. And at Kate's one, I was going, that's clever. That's really, really, really clever on so many levels. And I think because of that, when Bronwyn from Kate's office got in touch and said, are you still up for the chat with Kate? I was, yeah, but it wasn't that I was, oh my God, this is John Lennon. It was more that it was an appreciation for, she had the, can I say this, the kahunas, to go and step outside of the realm, to step outside of the norm. And that's probably where I'd see you, because to your credit, the one thing about that M&G garden was only when I was on the plane on the way home and I looked at it, and then I think somebody had posted a photograph, it was an overview, it was like a helicopter shot or a drone shot of the garden. And I looked at it and went, how the fuck did he do that? Like, how did he manage to do that? And so it was, again, it's that appreciation on a couple of levels of what you did. But I know we almost didn't meet today. Mm. You can blame my 7-year-old daughter who's not here to defend herself. But if it had happened, it happened. And if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. And I appreciate that you've got a life and that I've got something. I'm not too sure whether I have a life, but I've got something there anyway. But there was an appreciation, and I guess based on the fact that you stepped outside of the box, therefore there was a bit of a respect. What happened subsequent to that and the media reports, whether I agree with them or not aside, there very much was a respect for the build. Mm. Do you look at the likes of Pete and Dan in that same realm that I would respect you and Kate?
Yeah, it's a nice way of putting it, but yeah, I guess so. I mean, they are real masters of what they do, and it takes a lot of passion, a lot of hard work, and a lot of skill to be those people. And so there's a lot of respect behind the starstruck.
But do you go up to Dan Pearson and go, oh my God, you're Dan Pearson? Or do you go, hey Dan, What's up, man?
I was lucky enough to know Dan when I was a student, so I'm able to talk to him properly. When Pete came up to me, I was a bit gobsmacked. I didn't really know how to address him. But again, like all good gardeners, he's a very humble, very simple, down-to-earth bloke. And so we work in a brilliant industry where people can share on the same level because we all like mud.
What's the next bits for you? You spoke earlier on about the topping and, how do I say this, like topping, yeah. Chelsea.
Yeah, I've got to the top of the mountain. What's next?
Okay, but then you spoke about changing to maintenance side of things.
Yeah.
So I'm scratching my head. What's he going to do? Is he going to do rooftop on Apple Studios? Is he going to do the Beatles thing? Is it going to be a slight bow out and in 10 years' time we'll be saying, whatever happened to that guy? Whatever happened to him?
Yeah, well, if you don't keep your name out there, then you don't get any new business. So I'm going to have to keep working at that. And we've been doing lots of conferences, which is brilliant because I'm cross-fertilizing with a whole lot of really brilliant people. And so we're definitely going to keep at, you know, keeping our brand, keeping our name, making new gardens. But I'd like to make two new gardens a year, not 10, and then maintain 10 or 20 gardens and make... If I could make 10 brilliant gardens in my life, I'd be very proud.
How many brilliant gardens have you made so far?
None.
You said the 2012 one, was it?
The show gardens are different. You know, they last for 5 days, so they're kind of brilliant flashes in the pan, but a real garden that really works, really survives, really stands the test of time, flowers at the right time, the plants knit together, the maintenance is reasonable, they deal with the climate. That's great gardening, and that's what I really want to achieve.
Have you ever built a garden where the client has turned around and went, I want a shed and a washing line?
Yeah, actually, I really like washing lines. So I'm big into washing lines. I think they're a thing not to hide behind the back of the house. It's part of life, and that's just a good thing to see. When it comes to sheds, I do try and hide them. But we deal with those practical things. I've got this young master that works with me, Bruno Torini, and... he's a genius and a real engineer, and he does a lot of that work.
I'm going to ask you the one question I'm always asked about my own garden. Mm. What's yours like? I'll back that up before I say this and say that I'm not the client in my garden. It has to have a swing.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm unsure. Well, what did I say? The garden talk I gave a couple of years ago, and I was asked about it, and I said I did have the Peter Donegan Memorial Garden.
Mm.
And then the washing line went in, and then a swing and a slide and hens and all of that kind of stuff. Is yours a mishmash of everything? Do you have bits of leftover show gardens in it? Do you cut the grass regularly? What's that for you? Mm. Do you actually hate your own garden?
I've got this really amazing bit of land, very luckily found early on, with a oak woodland and a kind of olive orchard on dry stone terraces. So in itself, it's kind of wonderful. But as I said, I'm not a gardener, and I don't have the itch on a Sunday morning to garden. I go walking, and so I strim it once a year. And in France, they say the cobbler's kid's shoes are the worst shod, and it's definitely my case. I have no garden.
Bearing in mind the Emperor's New Clothes, a little bit of an analogy. If I was to walk out into your garden, would you expect... I don't mean to be insulting to anybody, but I see parks now in Ireland starting to do it, and in the UK where they leave areas to, inverted commas, biodiversity, and I'm going, you charlatans, that's just a money-saving thing. You don't have to cut the grass anymore.
Yeah.
You've just divided your costs in two by mowing one strip through it.
Yeah.
Do you get that bit? Do you... allow gardens that you build, design now to therefore be a bit like, what do they call it? Isn't it free jazz, where they all just go off and do their own thing, but they do it collectively, and it just sounds like 15 car horns just going off at one time. It's terrible.
Yeah, I definitely feel and believe that I am a charlatan.
You can't say that.
I just did. No, because I believe in that whole let it go, let it see what grows and evolves, and I really am excited by happy accidents. You know, they're potentially much more brilliant than what you initially imagined that would happen in a garden. And there's nothing better, I think, in Hyde Park than the bits they haven't mowed.
I fell asleep in the back of a truck once because it was easier than walking home. That point in your life where you go, will we spend the taxi fare or the bus fare? on another pint.
Yeah,
yeah, let's do it and yeah. just see how it rolls. Do you do that?
I don't know.
You're thinking about this.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer the question. I think, do I do that? I have ended up walking a long way home because I've had nothing left in my pocket, so I guess that'd be the way. I don't think I'd have slept in the car. I generally just walk home. And I have got on the bus. In London, there's a thing called the night bus. And if you've had too many pints, you get on the wrong direction. And then it's a really, really long walk home. But that's what I end up doing.
It wasn't my truck that I fell asleep in the back of. And by the way, it was open on the back. It was a builder's truck. And I think I woke up in Galway, if I remember correctly, which...
It's a long walk home.
I know, we stayed there for 3 days and we had a brilliant time. Like, it was great, you know. Do you get the point I'm making? I'm not trying to big Peter up here. It's probably a bit of an insult to myself, but I don't know, depending on how you see it. There's a bit of a happy-go-lucky. I've got 7 days to burn here. I could end up in Guatemala, but it just transpired it was Galway. It could have been 5 minutes away and that would have been quite disappointing. Do you allow yourself into a scenario where... it's a little bit the road less travelled, don't know what's around the corner, where most people I know would say, well, I've got to be out at 8 o'clock. I mean, even getting to hook up with you today, I think we were supposed to potentially meet on Friday, which became Saturday, which became Sunday, which then didn't happen. And then your best man,
Stephen
said, thanks Stephen, as a by the way, but Stephen said, tell him we'd meet him at that time, and that was okay, and I'm very grateful and thanks so much. But there's that amount of sliding doors or opportunities where I could and couldn't have met you, and you could have said anywhere in the country to meet, and you could have potentially said, right, jump in the back of the car, guess where we're going? Wales, Snowdonia, we're staying here for 5 days, you're trapped now, mate, that's just it.
Yeah, I think my one real strength is sort of a quiet confidence, and I think that confidence has allowed me to do what I do and, take a left turn instead of a right turn one day and see where it leads me. In a confident way that I'll make the best of it, and I've never needed to have anything. I'd be happy under a tunnel, in a tunnel somewhere sleeping, or in a mansion. It doesn't really bother me. So I've got this kind of freedom that's allowed me a freedom, and it's allowed me to be creative, and it's allowed me to live a very rich and fulfilling life so far. So very lucky.
I would consider rich and fulfilling on two different levels. Number one, I'm probably, because of what I do for a living, I don't think I'm ever going to be a bazillionaire.
No.
But I don't mind the fact that I'm not a bazillionaire.
No.
And don't get me wrong, I'd love a bazillion quid. Mm. But I think the riches that I get are, I don't mind going out to the barley field on the far side of the road and looking up at the clouds for 4 hours. Assuming that. Yeah, and that seems a bit far-fetched, but does that make sense when you talk about riches?
It's not money. We're not in the gardening world for money. No, we should become bankers if we're into money. We're into riches, the riches of life, the people we work with, the vegetation, the landscape we work with, that's our riches. And it's a very free and simple way of being very satisfied.
I reminded a woman in my life quite recently that my name isn't David Beckham, that I probably don't look as good as he does in a pair of jocks that with his own name in them, and I don't have my own aftershave range. Are you going to be a little bit, and this is my point, on a serious note, and I'm probably going to be a little bit always the struggling artist with a 3 grand heap of junk vehicle to drive around in, as versus a Ferrari with a tow hitch and a trailer on the back. Does that make sense with you, but you still sit quite happy with it?
Yeah, I think if you want to make a lot of money in our business, and people do, they create a formula and they repeat it, and they scale it up, and they become, you know, fairly wealthy people in a financial way, but there's no creativity in that, and it would kill me, so I couldn't be doing that.
But you're back to the thing that my mom used to say about me as versus my brother Liam. No offense, Liam, I know he doesn't listen anyway. Could you not do something normal? It's not abnormal what I do, and in my head it's not, but then I can appreciate why other people would say, oh Jesus, here's Peter Donegan. Again, it's not Shania Twain, which I can't stand anyway, if that makes sense. It's not the boy band. Does it irate you when you see formulaic gardens? I won't say irate you, but that you want to throw the television out the hotel bedroom window.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't interest me. you know. So I don't mind if people want to do that and make a living. There's a whole lot of people who want formula gardens, you know, and they're filling a really big hole in our business, and it's brilliant. And people are interested in doing that and interested in building big businesses and making good money out of that, but it's just totally not interesting to me. If I haven't got a challenge, it's not something new, I haven't got a new list of plants to delve into, I haven't got a new problematic soil to deal with, if it's not challenging, I don't want to get out of bed in the morning. It has to be challenging. That's most important.
Apparently I don't take compliments very well. I don't know why that is, and I've never really thought about it too much. I maybe, if I was to sit down and think about it, put it down to a little bit of being the lower middle child of 8-7 siblings. Do you take compliments well? Do you, when somebody says, "Oh my God, James Besson, you're amazing," you say, "I know"?
Yeah, no, I certainly don't say that. I don't believe in, I probably do belittle myself in a bad way. It's not the way to deal with it. The way to deal with it is to say thank you very much, you know. But I really, I'm really worried that I'm excellent at selling. And I'm excellent at sort of getting people to believe in something. And I'm worried about being the charlatan. You know, so when someone says, "James, you're amazing," I make sure they know that I'm certainly not amazing. I'm just like everyone else.
Yeah, I can't buy that one, though, because if Peter Donegan turns around and says he's not amazing, I think the greater part will turn around and go, "Yeah, that's a fair point, Peter." But when you turn around and say, "I'm not amazing," somebody is going to turn around and respond on Twitter or by text message and go, "He's a lying bastard."
Yeah.
Here he is with his two best in show and his gold medal at Chelsea 2017. By the way, just in case you didn't see that photograph, here he is with his other shiny thing. And didn't you win a bale of awards at the SGD Awards thing as well? Yeah. So I'm not buying the James is terrible at anything thing. I'm back to the John Travolta walk all over again. But you turn down the compliments, even though you got the shiny things inside your...
Yeah, and false modesty is a really unpleasant and ugly behaviour. So I don't... it's probably that. It's probably what I'm being. And I think that's really horrible. But, I just don't take compliments well. But I also just... I don't... You know, if everyone dug deep and did what they really believed in, everyone can do something brilliant and amazing. And that's potentially my ability, is to just do my thing.
I want to ask you about show gardening. This may or may not relate to you, but people who, let's say, were due to build a garden at Chelsea, at Hampton, at Tatton, I think the zeros are on the higher. You as an individual listening, maybe put the show up the ladder. I think it's all relative. And I think I've said before, you know, whether it's a cactus going into a local garden show when you're 7 years of age, with your pocket money, or whether it's you building your own show garden with your own money at your local show, whatever that might be, it's all relevant, to be quite fair. But for people who have been maybe on the promise of a sponsor and the sponsors pull the plug on it, or it's just not gone according to plan, and these things happen, and that's just business and that's just life, and you learn from it and hopefully become stronger. Do you feel for those designers, maybe if they're a little bit younger than me and yourself, maybe, how do I say it, but what advice would you have for people like that?
I think the best advice I got was when we wanted to buy a house and it was too expensive for us. One of our good friends, but 10 years older than us, said, "You think it's too expensive for you now, but if you just buy it now, you know, in 10 years' time, you'd be thinking, thank goodness I did that." And that's definitely what we did. In our 2013, after the fire garden, we thought we had a sponsor, and in fact, we never did. I just persuaded myself that we might get one, and it cost us 60,000 euros, and I'm still paying that off 6 years later. But it got me on the treadmill, and no one is owed a place at Chelsea or any of these shows. It's all about fighting your own way into it and getting your own message across. And so I think my message to people out there who want to get in is get kicking, get fighting, and if you've got to pay for it yourself, just work bloody hard and make it happen.
Did you ever have a day where you turned around, put your head in your hands and went, this day can't get any worse, this moment in time? That's not to say that it doesn't, in my case, it wasn't necessarily financial. I guess it might have been just little people running around in Peter's head, which is a very special place altogether. But have you had those moments in your career or life?
Yeah, I think I was a very troubled adolescent come young adult, and had no idea where I was going. I came into this business at 24 by accident because I called up a man called Kamal Mehdi, who took me into the garden design course on a whim, and it was a complete luck of the draw that I even got into garden design at all. And before then, I was a pretty lost character. I bumped into an amazing woman now called Helen Basson, and she really pulled me around, but I spent a good 6 years wandering, not knowing where to go. So, but being open-minded and being sort of self-assured in a quiet way, in the end of the day, I found a really good road to walk.
What's been the day where you've, and again, I know I chatted this maybe with Kate and with Anne-Marie, but where you turn around and say, we've made it, and then a week later you go, oh, there's another podium up there.
Yeah.
And then you get to the top of that and you go, oh, look, there's another one higher again.
Yeah.
What was the first one of them where you turned around and went, you'll never guess what? Boy done good.
Yeah.
We've made it. What was that?
I was the After the Fire Garden, you know, self-sponsored, 3 months of two of us working for free on top of the 60 grand, taking all the risks, doing something totally not expected or appreciated or likely to get any kind of prize. And we got best in fresh and gold at Chelsea, and that was, for us, was like, we made it. We stuck our necks out there and we did what we thought was right, and totally and utterly got so involved, you know, lost so much time but made so much time in the working of it. That was the thing that really made us very sure that what we believe in is right for us.
I remember listening to Billy Connolly, the Scottish comedian, being interviewed, and he said he was reading. No, he wasn't being interviewed. He was doing a stand-up gig in Dublin, sorry. And he was saying that he was on a plane coming back from where, I don't know, I never asked him. But that he read an article about himself, and it said that Billy Connolly's style of comedy is X, and this is how he does it. And he went, that's a total... Yeah. Crocker pants.
Yeah.
I don't really, he's never, a bit like people saying that I do research for the Sud Show.
Yeah.
It's not, it's just two fellas having a chat, in this case in the front of a Jeep. Yeah. And let's see where it goes, and there just so happens to be a microphone there. Have you ever read something about yourself and went, James Basson, he's what style? Are you joking me? I just threw a whole load of rocks in a garden and plants grew in the middle of it. For God's sake, woman, who writes this malarkey?
It's not a nice thing to say, but I generally don't read them. I really enjoy the process, and you know, people. It's like when you do a painting and you don't explain what that painting's about. People take from that painting what they want from it, and that's what I believe in. What we do, and so people can say what they want about our work.
No, I didn't mean controversially or for the negative or slagging you off or saying they didn't like your garden. Like, I think we've...
No, but even if they like... I'm not... I think we do have a very strong message in what we do, and it's kind of... There's a lot of repetition in our naturalistic process, and... there's a lot of new innovation in potentially in the creative process, but I don't mind what people take from it. And if they see something and they think that's what we're about, then that's potentially what we're about that day. But it's always going to change.
Well, I'll put this to you in context, or I'll try a little bit better, maybe a little bit differently. I read an article about the Sod Show, and it spoke about how I did do research and the people that I had on, and I was the amount of calls I had over it saying, you do what? No, you don't. Yeah. You were out in the pub last night. You got up the next morning and such was sitting in your house and you just happened to have the microphone there, which is actually the case.
Yeah.
And I remember going, You'd swear I'd written a concerto.
Yeah.
But I was amazing what they took from it. I was very grateful of the article about the Sideshow because I'm not exactly the BBC and I'm not sponsored. And again, we're in such lavish surroundings at this moment in time. But it is, well, yeah, well, there you go. There you go. We're missing a few pineapple trees. Yeah. It was more that it was that that's what they took from it rather than there was no criticisms of me. But have you ever read something about yourself and went, I what?
No, I don't think so, but I do have. I've had a lot of mates call me up and go, come on, you can't be serious. I've read this about you and, you know, I know who you are. Yeah.
Your best man, Stephen, we should give him a mention because I think I was driving up and I know you'd said, oh, we'll be outside, and he was with two kids and there's just two kids waving at me. I'm going, right, well, I recognise the other fella. That's James Basson. Yeah. And then he just starts pointing at you. Stephen's obviously Irish.
He is. He's from Dublin, from Dalkey, and we met at Manchester University. I was first studying anthropology, dropped out of that, went to do fine art painting, dropped out of that. And he was the sort of the man who managed to keep me from under the bridge. So I owe him a lot, and he's a man's man, and I've got a lot of respect for him, and I haven't seen him for about 10 years, as all good mates seem to fall out and fall in of communication. And so looking forward to having a few pints with him tonight.
You're not gonna have a glass of red wine then? No,
I think tonight he'll be forcing me to have pints, and he normally orders them in twos. The first one, three quarters down, then you can finish it off. And then you can save the second one. But the first one, you just wet the palate.
Have you figured out the methodology now for drinking two pints of Guinness simultaneously?
No, I haven't worked that one out, no.
Does Steve not do it, or does he just floor the first one and then it's...
before he floors the first one, leaves a little bit at the bottom, knocks that back, and then he can save the second.
That's quite impressive. I'm a little bit different. I'll take the top off the second one.
Okay.
So it doesn't go crusty, as I call it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's what I will do. It just breaks the seal on it. And then you keep the two of them going at the same time. Yeah, simultaneous.
And I'm gonna do that tonight and just see if he notices my real savvy way of drinking the Guinness.
If you made a face in the top of Stephen's pint, do you think he'd get irate?
Yeah, I don't think he'd like that at all. I don't think I should touch his pint. And he's a strong-looking guy. I'm not sure I'm going to touch his beer.
James Basson, thanks so much. And Helen as well. I was talking to her on, I think, Thursday amidst the hit and miss. It was like a very long-distance phone call in the 1930s that we had over a four-day period. And I think I just called her out of I won't say frustration, just said, oh, hey, what's the crack? I think she noted to me. I said, should I bring up the garden?
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I don't think he'll mind. I think he likes the controversy.
Yeah.
And I went, all right, fair enough.
Yeah. A lot of our clients ask us, you know, oh, James, I must come and see your garden. It must be wonderful. And Helen chuckles like that in the background. So it's a known thing in our part of the world that we don't have a garden.
I'll go back to what you said. Funnily enough, I know we're supposed to close out the interview, but you seem to surround yourself with really good people, and I'll put Helen and how highly you speak of Stephen into that bracket. It's something that I guess, having been what did somebody say, even palling around with me for an hour is a bit like a roller coaster, although I sound very sensible now and I'm talking, in that it could end up in any kind of divilment scenario, not major, you know, never in trouble with the law, maybe just to end up in Galway, if that makes sense to you. But I've really great people, great friends by my side at all times. When you talk about riches, is that one of them that's up on the mantelpiece?
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think Chelsea, going back to Chelsea, you know, you surround yourself with these amazing people. You know, you're surrounded by passionate stonemasons and gardeners and crane operators and organisers. And I get a real joy, a real pleasure about, you know, sort of working and orchestrating and managing and fitting in and taking out the rubbish with those sort of people. It's a real honour and a real pleasure. Anna and Sarah from Jarman Murphy, they're awesome plants women, and working with gifted people is a real treat.
James Basson, thanks so much. It's a real, it actually has been a real pleasure to sit and have a chat with you. Enjoy the pint of Guinness later on.
Thank you very much.
There you go. And that's it for another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. My huge, massive thanks to James and Helen Basson, and also to Stephen, James's best man, for making this one all possible. I hope you enjoyed it. Anything you heard on today's episode, if you need any more details, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow. and sodshow.com. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and chat to you next week.